earlier this fall, the governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, suggested that the state of Illinois might be able to save a considerable amount of money, millions of dollars, he said, if state employees were allowed to buy their prescription drugs from Canada. And in fact, that last fiscal year, the state spent something like $340 million on this. That was a 15% increase from the year before. So obviously, there's a lot of money to be saved here, potentially at least. The governor said, let's do a study of this issue, which was done. And he says his study concluded that the state could indeed save $91 million every year by doing this. The problem is that it's illegal. Only drug manufacturers are allowed to re-import drugs from Canada. And to do this, for the state of Illinois to do this, it would require a change in policy by the Food and Drug Administration, which says that it is opposed. In fact, there are a number of people that have come out in opposition to this plan, including Illinois pharmacists, the FDA, some members of Congress, President of the United States. That's the short list, I guess. So we thought this morning, as this is an interesting story and certainly involves important issues like the cost of prescription medications and the cost of health care in this country, it'd be interesting to talk about it. And we have here in our show a man who has spent a fair amount of time thinking about these particular issues about health care financing and health policy. His name is Robert Rich. He is the former director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois and still has a place there. He also has joint appointments in the College of Medicine and Political Science and the College of Law and teaches courses on health law and policy here at the University of Illinois. We'll try and talk about this story, and of course, questions and comments from people who are listening are welcome. 333-9455, that's the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, David.
I think that the first time that the governor mentioned this, it was earlier this fall, perhaps it was in September, I think. Why that? And certainly, it's what he's talking about is a pretty significant amount of money, although when you look at the budget situation of the state, it may be the proverbial drop in the bucket. Why this?
I think the governor realizes that costs of health care are a major issue on the agenda in the United States, and in particular, over the last couple of years, the elderly have put a lot of focus on the cost of prescription drugs. Because as people get older and live longer, prescription drugs have become a more important part or more important component of their health care costs. And so there's been a lot of lobbying to include a prescription drug benefit both in Medicare on the one hand and a greater prescription drug benefit in Medicaid, which is the state program, on the other. And so the governor, who is, I think, always interested in innovative or new proposals, said that he wanted to import prescription drugs from Canada, especially for the Medicaid patients here in Illinois, and that he did a study which showed that it would save a great deal of money. Those figures have been since challenged by other analysts, and most recently, as you know, today in the Tribune, reported his press conference yesterday in which he said he wasn't giving up on this issue and was quote-unquote at war with the drug companies and the very high cost of prescription drugs.
There are some other states in which they're thinking about doing the same thing. At least apparently they've talked about it, including, they tend to be here in the Midwest. Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota. So
correct, and also as you know, the Medicare bill, which just passed in Congress, the House version and the Senate version both had provisions which have allowed importing of drugs from Canada. The House version included that provision. The Senate version did not. The Conference Committee version does not include that provision, in part because the President of the United States has said he won't sign that into right. law.
And in fact, Illinois Congressman Rahm Emanuel was one of the co-sponsors of this version that did indeed pass the House.
Correct.
There is, and I guess to my knowledge, there is only one place in the country, one governmental unit that is doing this. This is the city of Springfield, Massachusetts.
Correct.
There's a voluntary program they have for city workers and retirees where they are doing this. They're getting prescription medications in Canada, and they're bringing them to the United States.
For a limited set of drugs. It's for the most frequently used drugs, which is, by the way, the governor's proposal here in Illinois, too. He wanted to take the top 20 drugs that are used most frequently by our citizens here in Illinois and import those, and that would, as he say, have saved money and been more efficient. I think the hidden agenda for him, which is no longer so hidden, is to put pressure on the drug companies, some of which are located here in Illinois, to decrease their prices.
Now, another thing that we also know is that there are, I guess, it's estimated something like 1 to 2 million Americans who, as individuals, are purchasing medications that way. Either they're buying them through internet sites, or they're actually going to Canada to buy them. Is anybody talking about filing any kind of charges against them, or for that matter, for the city government of Springfield, Massachusetts? Because what they are doing is against the law.
The Food and Drug Administration is seriously considering taking an enforcement action against Springfield, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. As far as the private sales go, if you go across the border yourself and come back and your bags are opened, they can be confiscated from you by immigration officers. I don't know that that's happening very often. I suspect it's not. And as far as internet sales go, I think they're not of a high enough volume yet that the Food and Drug Administration has taken action. But by law, they could take action. And I suspect now that the provision did not pass in this most recent reform of Medicare, which the president will sign into law with great fanfare, I'm sure, that the Food and Drug Administration may take greater enforcement actions.
Yeah. The as I mentioned right at the beginning and sort of explaining the basics here, the governor said, this is something to be a good thing to look at, and let's do a study to find out how much we might save. And his conclusion was, the conclusion of his study was, annual savings, $91 million. Now, as you say, some groups, the Taxpayers
Federation,
the National Taxpayers Union, and also the FDA.
And also the Illinois Taxpayers Federation.
Oh, okay. So also all of those groups have looked at the report that was done at the governor's request and said, well, no way are you going to save $91 million. I think, in fact, the Taxpayers Union said not $91 million, more like less than three. That's a pretty big difference. Has anyone who is in what we would call an objective position, sort of to size up what everybody says, looked at the figures and tried to conclude, in fact, well, how much money would the state potentially save?
That's a good question. I can't give you a exact number. And yes, there have been analysts who have looked at this. It depends a little bit on what you include in the savings here. And maybe we should talk for a minute about why drug prices are so much higher here in the United States than they are in Canada or Europe. And then maybe we'll understand a little bit more as to what the controversy is. In Canada and Europe, the prescription drugs are being sold to national health plans. And as a national health plan, the national health plan is able to purchase a very large sum of prescription drugs that the drug companies are willing to sell at a reduced price in those countries, in part because they know they can recover the research and development costs here in the United States. And the costs of research and development for new prescription drugs and for continued research are sizable. We spend more on research and development than any other country in the world, not only for prescription drugs, but for medical technology in general. And the drug companies, of course, contend that they need to recover those costs. And the only reason why they're able to sell at a so-called subsidized price or reduced price in Canada and Europe is because they are able to recover those costs in the United States. So the governor, of course, says that's unfair. Why should we pay that extra amount of money for research and development? The drug companies, Governor Blagojevich, says should do one or two things. Either they should spread those costs and not sell at the reduced cost in Canada or in Europe, or they should reduce their profit margin. One of the two. And the drug companies, in turn, and President Bush have said that's not realistic, and we need to continue to encourage innovation and research and development, and so therefore we will bar the importation of drugs. And the drug companies, in turn, have said that they will limit the number of drugs that they sell, even in Canada and in Europe. And they would rather have a shortage in Canada and Europe as opposed to having them come back as being imported in the United States. And that's something which we can look forward to in the future. I think that because of this debate, we can look forward in the future to either a reduction of supply to Canada or a renegotiation of price in Canada.
Well, that's the possibility of a drug shortage in Canada. This seems to be concerning people in Canada.
Of course.
In response to the governor's suggestion that the state could buy its medications in Canada. Canadian pharmacists, people have said, no, you can't do that because we barely have enough medicines to meet the need of people here in Canada. And if you did, that would cause us a great hardship. And in fact, the most recent stories, the ones just this morning, are indeed the governor complaining that the drug companies are in fact doing this or might do that, that is, as you say, restrict their shipments of medication to Canada so that there barely would be enough to meet the Canadian need, much less for them to have extra so that then those drugs could be re-imported into the United States.
The intent already is, even before this controversy, the intent always was to have only as much as the Canadians really needed, quote, unquote. And so it was always a calculation by the drug companies to sell as few as necessary. So, for example, you could only buy a three-month supply, and then there'd have to be new exporting from the United States into Canada. So this is only, I think, accentuated a controversy that already has been out there for some time.
Yeah. Apparently, in response to all of this, the Speaker of the House, Mr. Hastert, and some other members of Congress, those people who were opposed to the idea of either re-importing drugs from Canada or imposing somehow in this country price controls, they have said, and responding to this concern, this criticism, that we're in effect subsidizing lower drug prices in other countries. They've said, well, now the way to deal with this is through the kind of existing trade negotiation frameworks that we have. And in fact, it sounds like what they are saying is, well, we just need to lean on the Canadians and say to them, you may not like it, but you're going to have to pay more for your drugs. That costs there should be more in line with what we here in the United States are paying, which seems to be a rather difficult strategy. I don't know how it is, but unless there's some kind of levers that we can squeeze, why would the Canadians say, oh, yeah, sure, we'll pay more for our medicines just so we can close that gap between what we pay and what you pay? That seems pretty unlikely.
Well, except for the fact that there are instruments that the Food and Drug Administration has that could result in that. And by that, I mean Food and Drug Administration can say to the prescription drug firms, Abbott and Lilly and Pfizer can say, we're going to put a tax on you if you export too many, whatever too many means, we can operationalize that, drugs to Canada. We will put a tax on you, an extra tax on you to do that. And so I think what's more likely to happen is the Food and Drug Administration is going to pressure the drug companies to increase the prices, and the prescription drug companies in turn will say to the Canadians, we have no choice. We have to raise the prices. And the Canadian health system is then to some degree over the barrel, because it's not like importing Coca-Cola, where take it or leave it. I mean, prescription drugs are required for the health system, and there aren't too many alternative producers of many of these drugs. And so this whole controversy one of the side effects may be increased prescription drug prices in Canada. Mm. I suspect it will be, as a matter of fact.
Would it be possible for the state of Illinois, rather than going with this idea of re-importing drugs, the drugs that were manufactured in the United States, sent to Canada, rather than going to Canada and buy those drugs and bringing them back to the United States, do what the government of Canada has done and go to, you know, go to AstraZeneca and Lilly and GlaxoSmithKline and all the big companies and said, look, here in the state of Illinois, we're providing medical care for people who are on Medicaid and people who are retirees from the government and people who work for the government. We're in a position to buy a very large number of medications. So if we come to you and we say, particularly if it's a medication where competing companies essentially make the same thing, we say, okay, we're going to go with whoever's going to give us the best deal, and we're going to buy a lot of this. Give us the best deal and deal with the issue that way.
I think that's a good strategy. I think it's, however, more likely to work if the National Governors Association as a whole were to do that.
One state
probably can't have the impact that you've just talked about, because the prescription drug firm will say, fine, Governor Blagojevich, then you just won't have those drugs available in your state. Thank you.
No Nexium for you.
That's right.
Which these days in Springfield could be a very important drug.
That's right.
We have a couple of callers here and would be very happy to take questions, comments. Once again, our guest for the program is Robert Rich. He's been here on the show before to talk about different sorts of things. So he's particularly interested in science, technology, health policy. He has joint appointments with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, where he was director between 1986 and 1997. Also in the College of Medicine, Political Science, and Law. And questions, comments are certainly welcome. We have a couple of people here ready to go, and the first is in Belgium, near Danville, on our line 4. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I'm not a lawyer, so what I'm going to say may be questionable. But this seems, the United States has by far the bulk of the drug companies that produce these products, and they come here because they can get a good price. Now, since there's only these few companies that are dealing with this, and they support the prices at the rate that they want to support them by contributing to our politicians at a very high rate, I might point out, doesn't this seem a whole lot like antitrust that we had back in the first part of the last century, where John D. Rockefeller tried to control Standard Oil? Why couldn't we just say, wait a minute, you guys are manipulating the market, not only in the United States, but worldwide, and say, hey, you can't do this anymore. We're going to break you up.
If this really were antitrust, that would be exactly a strategy which could be followed. I think that what the U.S. government has said with respect to the pharmaceutical industry is to say, as long as there is competition in general in the pharmaceutical industry, this isn't antitrust. We've said it is okay for certain prescription drugs to be developed and sold only by one company. So the antitrust issue has been one of the pharmaceutical industry as a whole, although I would point out to you, for some of the higher quantity drugs like blood pressure medicine or other medicine, anti-arthritis kinds of drugs, there are several generic products available. And so there's competition there as well. The issue of collusion that you're referring to is a really good point. In collusion in terms of the drug companies as a whole cooperating with each other to make sure that the price is maintained is a issue which the U.S. Justice Department could decide to look into and investigate and do something about. Politically, we choose not to. So it's a political choice that not to do something about that. But your point is a good one.
Just like I was getting back at, that since they contribute such a great deal of money to these people. And also, if I might bring up one other little short point, these people say that they put so much money back into research. Well, why do they have such outstanding profit margins if they're putting so much back into research?
They do both. They do they do put an enormous amount back into research and development, and they have outstanding profit margins as well. I would say the profit margins are due to the fact that what I tried to say at the beginning of the program, people are living longer. One of the reasons why they're living longer is prescription drugs are a more important, more and more important part of their treatment regime. And with as many baby boomers as there are living and taking more drugs, it's almost predictable that the profit margin would be high.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Bloomington, Indiana for another caller here. Line one. Hello.
Hi. You implied that the drug companies are willing to sell drugs at a reduced price in Canada and other non-patent protected countries. And I don't believe that it is that the drug companies are willing to sell the drugs at a reduced price. It's because they have no choice. Canada says, either conform to our price controls or we will exclude you from our market. And we will not only exclude you from our market, we will allow a Canadian company to synthesize, to counterfeit your drug without any development and testing costs, and you will not only lose the Canadian market, you will have a counterfeit drug. You'll have to contend with a counterfeit drug. And if this kind of coercive violation of American drug patents, if it's not stopped, it discourages the development of new drugs. We have some wonderful drugs on the market now. They just do marvelous things. And they're all produced by American drug companies. They're not produced by Canadian drug companies because those companies have no incentive to produce new drugs. They're not patent protected. Now, I know that the drug companies have been guilty of some certain, I think that they probably coercively tried to prevent generic drugs from being produced. I think they probably are guilty of that. But they've also produced some wonderful drugs, and the reason they produce those drugs is because they have patent protection. And if this coercive system by Canada is allowed to succeed, that production of new wonderful drugs is going to stop.
I have no doubt that you're correct in terms of the fact that our prescription drug companies, our pharmaceutical companies have produced some quote-unquote wonderful drugs. I wouldn't debate that at all, nor would I debate with you that when I said the pharmaceutical firms are willing to do this, I mean, you're quite correct in saying they're doing this in part because of a negotiating strategy by the Canadian government as well. What I was trying to suggest before, in response to David's questions, is I think that our government now is going to step in on the trade issues and say that these practices are not going to continue. But I would also point out that the reason why the pharmaceutical companies in this nation are even able, whether it's willing or collusion or pressure, they're able to do this is because they're able to recover the costs in this country. They wouldn't be in a position to sell in Canada or Europe at reduced prices if they weren't able to recover those costs within the United States.
Yeah, that's true. And it's unfair to the United States if they were able to recover some of their testing and production costs, development costs in Canada, then the drugs wouldn't be as expensive in the United States.
I agree with that, and I was trying to say before, I think that's what's coming down the line. I think that within the next number of years, that's exactly what's going to occur, that the Canadians and the Europeans are going to be in a position of having to raise their prices, in part because of this whole controversy.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And certainly, there does not seem to be any, in Washington, D.C., much of any interest in the notion of putting any pressure on drug manufacturers to reduce their prices in the United States.
That's correct.
Where the prices are very high. And as you say, we have a greater and greater percentage of the population taking some kind of prescription medication. And we have a lot of people who are taking more than one. So part of the reason that spending on drugs has gone up so much is that so many people are taking so many drugs. Some people would say, if you really want to get at the issue of high drug costs in the United States, you need to do something about high drug costs in the United States. But given the feeling they have in Washington, D.C. about free markets, it seems pretty unlikely that they would do that.
I think it's really interesting, Dave, that you say that, because one of the most notable features of the most recent debate on prescription drug benefits in Medicare was there was zero interest in negotiating about prescription drug prices, and that this would have been a time to do that. Because if you're talking about a Medicare overhaul, and if you're talking about Medicare beginning to cover some prescription drug benefits, that's of great benefit to the pharmaceutical companies. And one could have said to the pharmaceutical companies at that point, you're going to get all of this new business, and we're going to require you to participate with us and have some reduction in the prescription drug costs. I mean, the greatest criticism that one could have of the current legislation, and has been out there already, is that the greatest beneficiary is not the elderly, although they do benefit. The greatest beneficiary is the pharmaceutical companies.
Right. Well, just for a second, and I want to make sure that people, I have a number of callers, so we'll get right to them, but I do want to ask you about this Medicare overhaul that has just now passed to great fanfare in the Congress, which does provide some assistance to people in paying for their prescriptions. It's going to take a couple of years. I think it's not going to happen until 2006. In the meantime, I think maybe there is a little, they're offering just a little bit of some kind of assistance, sort of a token that says, okay, on some of your prescriptions, we're going to shave off a few
10%.
So, yeah. So it's not. I suppose if you're taking enough medication, that could end up to amount to a significant amount of money. But when you look at what it is that's now going to happen, particularly when this actually happens in 2006, how significant is this?
I think that it is a pretty significant amount of money for people making less than $80,000 a year, and having prescription drug benefits. Prescription drug costs up to $2,250, it will be a sizable savings. The problem with the current legislation is that if you have prescription drug costs over $2,250, between $2,250 and $3,600, there is no coverage. And it's only after you have spent more than $3,600 a year in out-of-pocket expenses that you can once again get a benefit, so that the exposure of an elderly person to out-of-pocket costs, if they really are taking quite a bit of medicine, is going to be quite high.
Yeah, that's a big gap.
It's a very large gap, especially if you're living on a limited income. So the answer is, it is a significant benefit, up to $2,250, and if you make less than $80,000 a year.
All right, let's talk with someone else. Arcola next, line four. Hello.
Yeah, I want to take issue with the caller from Indiana a few calls ago who said that the reason the Canadians' drug cost is cheaper is they don't respect U.S. property rights. I think that's hugely incorrect. The reason why they get it cheaper is because they have a different approach to financing their health care costs, and they come in as with the clout of a big buyer rather than the sort of diffuse system that we have here in the U.S. They do respect property rights, and in terms of what sort of drugs we might expect them to generate with a population of 22 million, you know, probably you could expect them to generate the same sort of new drugs as the population of Georgia and Mississippi combined. I mean, it seems to be totally ridiculous to think that just because they're a sovereign country that's a fraction of the population base that we are, that they would be investing the same amount of money that the U.S. would in drug research. And then finally, I've got a question. We have the U.S.-Canadian Free Trade Agreement that's, what, getting close to 20 years old. Are the how are the drug sales affected by that agreement? It seems to me to be some sort of a violation of free trade that the drug companies can put controls on how much they're willing to sell to a willing buyer just because that buyer is in Canada, or were there codicils in that agreement that exempted pharmaceuticals from the agreement?
My understanding of the free trade agreement, this is not my area of expertise, so but I'll tell you what my understanding is. My understanding is that it allows us to sell back and forth without restriction to what we're selling back and forth. For some areas, for example, steel, there is a restriction. There are tariffs, special tariffs put on imported steel. The notion of free trade here is that we're not going to put special tariffs on either what we're importing or exporting. The law doesn't, to my understanding, say anything about supply. I mean, free trade in a free market is a willing buyer for a willing price. So there's nothing which requires the pharmaceutical companies to sell X amount to Canada. We can restrict the amount we're willing to sell, even if the demand is high.
But I mean, that violates, I mean, I'm interested in the free trade angle on this, because people who generally are big advocates of free trade are all of a sudden wanting to be protectionist when it looks like free trade might drive down the cost of drugs for us. It is protectionist to simply put restrictions in place and say, we're not going to charge you a tariff, we're just not going to sell you the good at all. An open market says that you post a price and you say, I've got this commodity to sell at X price, and willing buyers can come have it. And it seems to me that if the drug companies were subjected to that sort of an open marketplace, there would be a leveling, and it would effectively raise the drug costs for Canadians, but it would also reduce the drug costs for us. And it's this veil of secrecy that they've gotten by with so long that allows them to overcharge on the American side and then sell the same drug at a vastly lower cost at other countries around the world.
I don't think there's any veil of secrecy. I do think you put your finger on a very important point, though, which is a totally free market in this case would raise the price in Canada and lower the price in the United States. We don't have a totally free market with respect to the exporting of drugs into Canada, because the Canadian government has negotiated a subsidized or a reduced price. And because of that, the prescription drug firms, the pharmaceutical firms, I think would be in a position to say that at that reduced price, we're only going to sell X amount. And if you want to have more than X amount, you're going to have to pay a higher price. I don't think that violates any laws in terms of being able to do that.
Well, it seems like one of the issues here is sort of the veil of secrecy, because on the American side, they have effectively kept one party from knowing what the other party is paying, rather than having in an open market, you sort of have, if you want to buy 1,000 units of a drug, it's this price. If you want to buy 10,000, you know, it's 10% less, and so on. They've been able to keep the various parties in the dark about what they are actually willing to sell it for until now the spotlight. I mean, people who wanted to know could sort of sort these things out, but Blagojevich has put the spotlight on what's going on and raised a lot of concern. But my impression is prior to that, you know, it's pretty hard to find out, you know, what the going price is for a given quantity of drug if you want to buy it in large units. And that seems to be a violation of the sort of free trade ideology that we're supposed to be operating under here.
My view is that you're right in saying that anybody who wanted to find out what the prices were and wanted to look hard enough could, but the pharmaceutical firms weren't advertising their differential price scheme before.
Mm-hmm. Interesting topic.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to another caller here, and I think that the next person in line is in the Chicago area, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, first of all, I agree with a lot of the callers, especially not the previous one, but the one before that, about this was the time with the Medicare thing to have really you know, put some pressure on the drug companies to contain the costs. On the other hand, there's one other issue that I don't know if it's been raised. I tuned in slightly late, and that is the enormous amount that drug companies spend on advertising. I mean, they claim they're spending this fortune on research and development. I would be really curious about how that compares with advertising. They are everywhere. You know, big chunks of magazines, TV programs, on and on. And I frankly think it's obscene in terms of what they're getting away with. Does anybody have any notions about how their advertising budget compares with research?
I don't have any exact figures for you. I would tell you my hunch is that the advertising budget is substantial, as you say, but I think it probably is dwarfed by the development costs, the research and development costs that go into the development of a new drug.
I see. You mean the lobbying, the contributions, and the advertising would still not really be substantial compared to the research?
Oh, it's substantial. It's just not by any stretch of the imagination as high as the research and development costs. It's not just the research. It's also the testing. It's the
sure.
We should point out in this context that it takes longer to get a new drug approved in the United States than any other country in the world. We have the strictest safety and efficacy standards in our U.S. food and drug law of any country in the world. And those costs, I should point out, are borne entirely by the pharmaceutical companies. The U.S. government, I think correctly, doesn't pay for any of those development costs, doesn't pay for any of the testing costs, doesn't pay for any of the safety testing. That's all borne by the innovator. And that's why these costs are so high.
Well, of course, they have had just constant, unmitigated, incredible profits too. So
that's absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. To another caller. This caller is in Forest, Illinois, line 2. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Contrary to what your guest just mentioned, I had read one time that marketing costs were higher than research and development in some of the drug companies, especially for certain products. Also, is it true that many of the U.S. drug companies are subsidiaries of other companies and other owned in, from other parts of the world, especially in Europe? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. I don't know. I guess I don't know the answer to that question, whether there are American companies that are owned. American drug manufacturers that are actually owned by companies outside the United States.
There are pharmaceutical manufacturers that are owned outside the United States that do business in the United States. Yes.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and let me introduce again our guest, Robert Rich. He has joint appointments with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the U of I, where he was the director for a number of years, also College of Medicine, Political Science, and Law. He teaches health law and policy and is very interested in the whole issue of the cost of healthcare, among other things. He's interested in science and technology policy, sort of generally, but this is something, this issue of costs, the cost of healthcare, is something we've talked about before on the program. And here, particularly this morning, we're talking about the cost of prescription medications, and sort of our jumping off point was the some of the comments made by the governor, Mr. Blagojevich, about going to Canada to get prescription medication and bringing it back here to Illinois for state employees and retirees and people who are on Medicaid as a way of trying to trim down the amount of money that the state spends on health care and ultimately deal with the difficult budget situation the state has had over the past couple of years. And questions, comments, again, are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, it seems that we have here a situation where the trend that we have talked about, that is the cost for prescription medication, I think we should expect it continue to go up. The bill continue to go up. We expect as the population gets older, more people are going to be taking medication and more medication. So that trend, you graph that line out, it just seems to keep going up and up and up. We also have on the part of the national government a resistance to the idea of price controls, about putting any pressure on the companies to keep their prices down, even though some people think they're making too much money. Maybe on the state level, people are interested in trying to do something, but how much they can do, that's perhaps questionable unless, as you say, all the governors got together and decided they were going to do that as a group. It just it seems as if we have this trend, the line that keeps going up and up, and our options for doing something about it, particularly if you take into consideration political reality, seem about none.
Well, the other option, David, is the U.S. Food and Drug Administration could change the law. They could change the law, which would allow states that wanted to import drugs to do that. That would be an indirect way of going at this. I mean, you have the Food and Drug Administration change the law, and if you got enough states who did change their, who took advantage of a change in the law, that would also put pressure on the drug companies as well.
Would it be enough, supposing that all that the governor and some of the his fellow governors here in the Midwest, supposing you could get enough states to put together a Midwest drug buying compact, so we'll get Indiana and Missouri and Wisconsin and Michigan, and we'll all go together and we'll say that. Would that, do you think, be enough leverage? Of course, then the FDA could come along and say, no, you guys, you can't do this. But if the FDA decided to just turn away and say, okay, fine, we'll not prosecute you, you do what you want, would that be enough? Say what's the critical mass that you would have to get together to make something like that work?
No, I think if the FDA, first of all, let me say, I think you'd have to get a change of the law.
Okay.
I don't think the FDA would just look away at this, because they couldn't look away while trying to enforce other standards with the pharmaceutical companies. But let's assume they changed the law, which I don't consider to be out of the question at all. And we had a Midwest coalition. That would be a large enough group, I think, to put significant pressure on the pharmaceutical companies, at least to create a crisis. I mean, imagine the following. You get this coalition. They want to purchase a large number of drugs. Canada says yes. And then the Abbott and Pfizer and Lilly say, guess what, Canada? We're not going to give you any more. We're not going to give you enough. So you're going to choose. You're either going to fulfill the order from the Midwest Coalition, or you're going to fulfill your own needs. Which is it going to be? And that would cause, then, I think, enough backlash to put internal pressure within the United States on the pharmaceutical companies. In other words, the way you're going to get change is either bottom up, from the states putting pressure on the pharmaceutical companies, or the federal government down. And if, as long as we have the current majority in Congress and the current orientation in the White House, the likelihood of putting pressure top down is small. The likelihood of putting pressure bottom up is much higher, because of the fact that, as you know, healthcare spending in the states is the single largest item in state budgets, and only going to get higher. So that's a more likely route.
Oh, all right. To Terre Haute, let's talk with the caller over there in line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I would like some clarification. I understood your guest to indicate that the FDA could put leverage on the pharmaceuticals, that they were going to raise their prices. Does the FDA have the authority to raise or set prices?
No, they don't have any authority to set prices, but because of the strict regulatory standards that the FDA has and the impact they have on pharmaceutical companies, they can pressure the pharmaceutical companies and say to them, it would be in your best interest to lower prices. And somehow when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration speaks, the pharmaceutical companies at least listen, if not jump.
Well, it seems to me that since the people at the FDA are appointed, and that recently there have been reports, I even saw one on television about people who have been doing the testing and who have filed reports who were then told to change the wording so that the pharmaceutical company in question would not have their drug rejected. That's a very interesting sideline to me. Plus the fact that the FDA needs to do some advertising so that those of us who are consumers who have reports to make about adverse drug effects have a much better idea of how to access the FDA when reporting, because, of course, in this country, doctors are not required by law to report adverse side effects.
You make 3 points, all of which are worth replying to. Number one, let me deal in reverse order. The FDA, it's only the director and the associate directors of the FDA who are appointed. Other people are permanent civil servants. And I would say, even though I am not a great defender of the federal government, I would say that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is the agency I have the greatest respect for in terms of their scientific and professional expertise. Number two, the website for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has a wonderful ombudsman site on it that would be interested in hearing any complaints that you have as a consumer. And number three, I agree, some public service announcements by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which lets people know how they can get more information and where they can file complaints, would be a good idea.
I think it's terribly sad that there are so many presumptions about people having access to the Internet. I think that websites are foreign language to many people, and those who are in that category have no idea about websites or how to access them. So if it's on television and it's advertised and promoted in that way, that would be far more helpful than even referring to a website.
I agree, and the FDA has an 800 number which they should advertise as well.
Thank you.
Well, I thank you for the call. My apologies. We have one last person we can't take. We're simply going to have to stop, but I'm sure this is a story that we're going to continue to follow and talk about. Perhaps on another day we talk some more, but for the moment we say thanks very much, Bob, for being here.
Thanks, David.